This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our online and broadcast Main Street all across North Dakota. And today we're going to break from our usual format, as we have occasionally, to celebrate, you know, the feature aspect of our show, which is music today. We're going to talk with our very own Mike Olson. He is the host of Into the Music with Mike Olson, heard here on the Prairie Public Radio Network. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Doug, it's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you in studio. I'm actually looking at you most of the time during the pandemic. I've been talking to people on the phone, and I've been in my basement. But here we are in our downtown studio for Prairie Public. Mike, let's get a little background first. How did you get where you are?
Well, you know, it's probably a lifetime of listening to music in many ways, but I got started in radio. If we're just talking about radio, I got started in radio up in Grand Forks on KFJM back in, I think it was 1984.
Wow.
And started into music then. And I play, I have a wide variety of interests, both, you know, jazz and roots music and blues and things like that. And so they found a lot of use for me there. And then in 1991, I started this show called Into the Music, which was an eclectic format, and kind of it was prior to what they used to call AAA radio. There's no Americana at that point or anything, and that all got formed later due to stations like that and shows like Into the Music.
Well, when I was a kid growing up, as you were at the same time, it was Top 40 or it was classical or country.
Exactly.
And I mean real twangy country. So things have changed. The music niches have increased. And as you say, you've got this eclectic show. So you're ready. You're ready for the new world out there, I take it.
Yeah. Well, actually, Doug, you know, the thing about it is, and of course, at that time, where on KFJM, there was no popular music at all being played on the radio. It was jazz and classical music and then Prairie Home Companion and some folk music. But at the same time, you know, you had records coming out like Paul Simon's Graceland and Sean Colvin's Steady On, records that were maybe folk records with high production values and things like that. And David Byrne and the Talking Heads, what it amounted to is there was a lot of really great music that just wasn't being played on the radio. And even, you know, deep cuts of Bob Dylan or Van Morrison or anything, all these great people just were not represented anywhere on the radio.
So you've been doing this for at least 36 years, if my math is correct.
Yeah.
And you were doing stuff before that, because I'm looking at you, Mike, and you're about my age.
Right.
So where did this love of music come from?
Well, I think it started at home as I was growing up. In fact, my brother and I were just laughing. We started talking about the records we listened to as kids. And in fact, for Christmas, he went and found this whole set of records that we listened to when we were like 5 years old. And that was this series of records we had that were like Discoverer series, where the guy would take, they'd say, "Come on, adventurer, let's go for a ride with the Pony Express."
So a lot of sound effects.
Right. Or Paul Revere. You know, Discover America with Christopher Columbus. So anyway, we were just glued to records at that time. And then we started to listen to music by people like Marty Robbins and Roger Miller and, who else? Well, Talking Comedy Records, Homer and Jethro. Who else did we listen to? Bob Newhart.
You're touching on a lot of history there, I think, except for Bob Newhart, they're all dead.
Marty Robbins is long gone, I guess. They're all dead, but that music, you know, is all so good. It's like Marty Robbins, that Gunfighter Songs and Trail Ballads, that's timeless, you know.
Well, isn't it odd, though, in a way, that the music that we listen to avidly as young, you know, teenagers and college students and all that kind of thing, is stuff that our kids like to listen to now.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles are still popular. The Rolling Stones are still popular.
Yeah.
The Doors are still popular.
Well, and I guess, you know, the really quality stuff sticks around.
So how did you accumulate this encyclopedic knowledge of music? Because when people listen to your show or talk to you, they can't help but notice that.
Well, you know, I mean, going back to the days, like, I guess I first started collecting music on 8-track tape.
And oh, boy.
I got my first car. When I was 14, I had a full-time job working at a gas station, and I was able to save up enough money that I had my own car. And you could get your driver's license at 14 then. So I had my own money, and I had my own car. And that was right when 8-track players came out. And so the first thing I did is got an 8-track put in my car. And started collecting 8-track tapes.
So you've done what I've done all my life. I've been working in TV and radio, and the formats keep changing. That is the recording formats.
Right.
So there's no way I can, you know, see my early days in TV or anything like that unless I go down to the cities and find a 2-inch videotape machine. And you're talking about an 8-track machine that was probably popular for, what, 4 years or
like
that?
Right, exactly. Not a perfect format, but that was what we had. You know, and you know, it's interesting, Doug, because like as in terms of what got me here, he's now my brother-in-law, but this fellow that I was friends with bought an 8-track recorder.
Oh, boy.
Right. And not only that, he was kind enough to loan it to me. And I made great use out of it because I had quite a collection of music. At that time, I had already started buying records, even though I didn't have really a good system to play them on. But anyway, so I got things set up, and I started making what they would call mixtapes now. And I started doing that then, and I made hundreds of them.
All right. So you were accumulating an encyclopedia of music, and the knowledge sort of seeped into you.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, you know, it's funny because as a kid, you know, or my early high school days, I was a hard rocker. We were into Slade and Black Sabbath.
Oh,
and
boy.
All the stuff, you know.
See, I was out of school by then.
Well, I moved out of that, though, by, I would say, even by the time maybe I was a senior in high school, I personally started moving into more of a, you know, the kind of a country music thing and starting to discover bluegrass and things like that. And I really took a veer about 1974, and I just kind of got away from popular music, like what was on the radio. It was that I always tell this story, but it's true. You know, at that time, I had been buying everything by Fleetwood Mac and Linda Ronstadt and all the California artists and the Eagles. And I noticed that what was happening to all these people that I was following is that they were becoming very popular, getting a lot of money, doing a lot of cocaine, and the records were getting worse and worse and worse. And yeah. I thought, I can't continue to subsidize this, you know? And so I just quit. I basically got out of the popular music thing, and I started exploring music from, I'd already found out about Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday and Django Reinhardt. And so I started to really explore music from the 20s and 30s and 40s. And I did that really not just in jazz, but I did it with country music and Western swing. And, you know, so I learned a lot about Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys in the early days of jazz and pre-war jazz and pre-war blues. And once you start that way and you start to get a historical context for everything, it just keeps coming. And so Fats Waller becomes really interesting, and they all become, you know, it opens up for you.
Well, one of the things we were chatting about in this currently having this discussion was the performers we've lost in 2020. And you mentioned country music, and one of the icons of country music for me growing up and also a barrier-crossing performer was Charlie Pride.
Absolutely. And We lost Charlie to COVID this year. And that's absolutely true. We lost Charlie.
Some old friends on the street, they wonder how does a man get to be this way. I've always got a smiling face, anytime and any place. And every time they ask me why, I just smile and say, you've got to kiss an angel good morning and let her know you think about her when you're gone.
You know, when he hits that refrain, everybody's singing by then.
Right.
In the bar, the place is getting noisy. But there was a guy who was performing a kind of music you really didn't expect from him.
Well, that's right. Charlie, of course, you know, was a black artist and the first one to really be taken in by Nashville and to have hits. And he had many. He had like 30 number one hits. He's in the Country Music Hall of Fame, one of the great figures in country music. And, it was... he's had quite a career, made quite a contribution.
Well, he's got quite a legacy now. Mike, did you ever play an instrument? Have you ever performed?
I haven't performed. I have played guitar and I've harmonica and various things like that. I had mandolin. So I've definitely been around instruments a lot. The trouble with once you get into radio... in the way that I'm doing it anyway, it becomes so time consuming that eventually you have to make a decision on where you're going to spend all your time. You know?
Well, Mike Olson is the host of Into the Music with Mike Olson. Of course, he's probably the best known voice on the Prairie Public Network. He's been doing this for a very long time. How did the title come to be, Into the Music?
Okay, so we're going to... It was actually, like, people were very nervous about this show because we were going to change formats, you know, and it had been this humanities kind of talk. And it was going in on AM radio, but they needed to change. They knew that. And so the station manager had approached me and said, present them some options. And so I did. I presented them three different options, and one of them was Into the Music, and I made the pitch about all this music that wasn't being represented, but it was being reviewed, you know, on All Things Considered or Morning Edition, or the artist might be featured on Fresh Air or something like that. But we weren't playing any of it, and he liked music, so he gave the go ahead to it. Well, so then it became this committee decision of what the name is going to be, and we bandied about all these names, and I completely tired of the idea and said, okay, guys, this is either it or you can call it whatever you want. I'm out of here. it was the name came. I mean, we're going to call it the Instant Karma Coffee House at one time because it was a morning show. But they didn't like that. Somebody didn't like that. And so... anyway, one of my favorite artists and an artist that really works for this show because of his own exploration of a wide variety of music, whether jazz or blues, is a guy named Van Morrison.
Yeah.
And Van had a record at that, within a couple of years there, called Into the Music. And I was looking at that album and I thought, well, there it is. Because they wanted a transition from news to music. And so everybody was so, worried about, getting the name right. And so Into the Music it became. But people always said, man, you're really into music.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
It is true. So it worked then, and it just continues.
Well, when I look at your schedule, I shake my head because there isn't anybody I know in radio who does, 7 hours a day?
Right. Yeah, it's a lot.
9 to 10 and noon to 6. Now, obviously, technology helps a little bit, but how do you do it?
Well, for one, I listen to a lot of music. I mean, I'm continually auditioning and resting, and thankfully, I do really enjoy music. But what I do when I settle in, I try to have no interruptions because I find if I'm distracted at all, once I kind of get into the flow of it, time can just sail along. Like, it's just, I get the ball rolling, and I can, you know, there we go.
Okay. Well, let's go again with somebody else we lost in 2020. You've got quite a list here, and I didn't realize all these people were gone. But
I know. You know, Doug, you were talking about this year particularly, I think, is kind of a sad year. I know, because many of these people, like, I can remember first discovering them, you know, and like they've been big artists for me, you know, and then all of a sudden they're gone.
Well, let's talk about Bill Withers, who had a lot of famous hits.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill, in fact, he was a guy who, you know, went to the Navy, spent 9 years in the Navy, and then he went and worked in factories and was a musician at home and decided to, you know, maybe he could make it as a songwriter. And so he kept pitching songs, and finally he got signed. Well, the company that signed him, Sussex Records, they actually had enough faith in him to hire Booker T and the MGs to produce the record for him. And they had two hits right off the bat, Ain't No Sunshine and this one.
Grandma Haynes clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hand played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass.
Wow. I'd forgotten that one.
Oh, it's so great. And then, well, check this one out, Doug.
On me, brother, when you need a hand, we all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you understand.
Yep, that one certainly hits a chord with me.
Absolutely, and for the times, too, you know. Bill Withers is one of those artists that in a year like we've had with all of the different events that have gone on, that's Bill's music is comforting and inspiring to people and, great artist.
Yeah, he sure is.
Another great talent that we lost.
Grandma's Hands and Lean on Me. You hear stuff and then you hear it years and years later and it all comes back. That's something about music.
Right.
It really touches you in a way that other things don't.
Here's a guy, you know, there were so many artists, so many great artists that died this last year. Here's a guy who I mentioned that I started doing Into the Music in 1991. And this is a record that came in 1991. And it was called Satan and Adam. And Satan was a guy that was playing on the street on the corner in Harlem, and making quite a racket. He was playing drums and he was playing drums, guitar, and singing all at once. And this fellow who was a professor at NYU heard him, and he walked around the corner and asked him if he could sit in. And they hit it off, and in fact, formed a duo, recorded several albums, had wide success. Here's Satan and Adam.
You groovy people, night and day, I'm always glad to see you. Listen what I tell my baby, I said, baby.
That I would call the fusion of jazz and blues.
Right. It's such happy music, you know, and yet you could just hear it would be on the street corner as well. And, they had quite a, you know, they recorded about three records. There's been a real nice documentary about them. And, but anyway, one of the artists that got COVID this year and died from it was Sterling McGee, better known as Satan of Satan and Adam. And that was Groovy People.
How do you envision your audience, Mike?
Well, they're music fans, and I What they need to do, I think you have to have a really kind of an open mind towards music, because you're going to learn about a lot of music that you may never have heard about mm-hmm. before. And at first, what I found over the years is, I mean, the people that don't like it just tune away, but the people that do like it or are curious about it, they'll ride with it, you know, and it may take them, you know, 2-3 weeks or whatever. And then they're starting to get the idea of what's going on here. And they end up becoming very devoted to it, because they not only hear things like Bill Withers, but make discoveries of people like Satan and Adam, or, you know, many, many, many other artists, because it's such a wide world of music out there. And that's, you know, really what it's all about.
And another thing that makes music so interesting, particularly in a melting pot world like we're in these days, is that that was probably, for many of us, our introduction to real diversity.
Yes.
Not just the music itself, but the people who are performing it. And, you know, we were talking about Charlie Pride. Well, Little Richard.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you think of great figures in, like, you think of rock and roll. I mean, if there's a Mount Rushmore rock and roll, you know, you got Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, you know, Elvis, we could throw him in, and Jerry Lee, and Little Richard. And just everything about Little Richard is kind of epitomizes rock and roll. And yet you're going to have to open your mind a little bit, Richard.
Go to town and Mary bought Uncle John. He claimed he has a misery, but he had a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, long tall Sally, she's a bit of a species guy. Everything that Uncle John needs. Oh, baby. Yes, baby.
You know, I wonder if Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis didn't share a bill or two, because they're both pounding, you know, Jerry Lee the piano.
Absolutely. And the thing about that is, who closes?
You know, yeah, who could?
Jerry Lee, you know, I mean, when he'd do shows with Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee would set his piano on fire. And he'd say, yeah, follow that.
So before they were smashing guitars, Jerry Lee was lighting his piano on fire.
Right. He'd say, go ahead, Chuck, follow that.
So do you try to introduce new music? You suggested, you know, that sometimes you kind of really focus in on a show and you're thinking about the flow and who's out there listening, being a music appreciator. So introducing new music to your audience.
I'm continually introducing new music. I would say, you know, when I think about the show, I like to think about a third of it is new music. And as I've done this over the years, you know, if you play continual new music, people kind of tune out because it becomes too much. They don't have something familiar to kind of sing along with or to feel comfortable with. And so when you do something like I do in eclectic format, you want to continually be bringing them back to something. Even if they don't know the song, they know the artist. You know, it's a familiar voice.
Uh-huh.
Or a cover or something like that. You want to be able to give people something new, but also, you know, make it so that there's things that are familiar to them. They know there'll be something familiar coming up soon, too, so they ride with you.
Mike Olson is the host of Into the Music with Mike Olson on Prairie Public's radio network. We'll be back with more of our music expert sharing time with our listeners on Main Street. But first, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. The House has passed a measure called the Uniform Faithful Presidential Electors Act. It affects the vote from North Dakota's three presidential electors and requires the votes to be cast for the candidate who won the popular vote in the November election. Bismarck Republican Representative Lawrence Clameen told the House North Dakota does not have this kind of law in place.
For instance, an elector chosen by one party as a result of the popular vote could decide to cast a vote for the candidates of the party that lost the popular vote. This hasn't happened here, but it is possible.
The vote was 82-7. It will now be considered by the state Senate. A West Fargo lawmaker has introduced a flat tax bill. Republican Representative Kim Koppelman says the bill would establish one rate for the state income tax.
We aren't allowing exemptions, but we are having a high threshold so that the purpose is to certainly not to tax those who are in lower income brackets any more than they are currently taxed. But I asked for it to be prepared in such a way that the that lower income people would not pay any more, and that it be as neutral in terms of its impact on taxpayers as possible. That's the intent.
The bill sets a 2% rate on the income tax based on the federal taxable income figure calculated on your federal return. And a Williston lawmaker has introduced a measure for annual sessions of the North Dakota legislature. It's the third time Republican Senator Brad Becketall has introduced the bill. Becketall says the state's budget has grown. It's now about $15 billion for a two-year period. And he says the legislature is still meeting every 2 years to decide how to spend it.
The Attorney General, as you know, also put out an opinion a couple of years ago that questioned the legitimacy of the budget section, which now acts on financial request issues in between sessions. I've always been a proponent that every legislator constitutionally needs to act on all of those decisions and not just the budget section.
But Becketall says it's not just financial issues that could be addressed.
There are times when there are corrections needed to the policy bills that we work on every session that have to wait 2 years to get corrected, and I don't think that's appropriate for the citizens as well to not have that avenue to correct those.
Becketall says the legislature must still come up with a two-year budget in the odd-numbered year sessions. He says the bill keeps the 80-day maximum for legislative days, and he envisions that that the even-year sessions would be shorter than the odd-year sessions. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
Hello!
Life is a cabaret, and so much better with a glass of Cabernet. Tuesday, February 2nd and Thursday, February 4th at 7:30 p.m., FM Opera Local Artists will present an evening of classic show tunes and cabaret songs at TAC Music Venue in Dilworth. Each ticket includes a glass of cab and an evening of delightful music. Seating is limited, and safety protocols will be followed, including social distancing and masks. Tickets are available at fmopera.org. On Prairie Public Primetime TV tonight,
meet Sergio. This 83-year-old nursing home resident is also an undercover spy. Intrigue, heartbreak, and hilarity ensue in this tender tale. The Mole Agent on POV.
Watch POV The Mole Agent tonight at 8:30 Central, 7:30 Mountain on Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Mike Olson, yes, the host of Into the Music on Prairie Public. And Mike, we've been talking about artists that we've lost in 2020 and the range of music that you play on your show, and which is Into the Music and is very diverse in terms of the sound. Take us down another road here.
You know, Doug, here's an artist that died on Christmas Day. And he was making coffee on Christmas Day, and he had either a heart attack or a stroke, and that was it for him. He is not a household name by any means, but within the world of bluegrass, he's on Mount Rushmore.
Wow.
And just like Little Richard in rock and roll, his name is Tony Rice, and he's considered really the greatest guitar player that ever played in bluegrass music. In fact, bluegrass didn't really have lead guitar prior to that. They did with there was an artist that played with the Byrds named Clarence White who served to be kind of a teacher for Tony when Tony was only like 8 years old. And then Clarence got killed. But Clarence had kind of set Tony off in the right direction as far as the possibilities of guitar and bluegrass. And so I want you to listen to, this is one considered one of the greatest recordings in bluegrass. And this is a young Tony Rice sitting in with J.D. Crowe and a band called The New South. It also featured a very young Ricky Skaggs and a dobro player named Jerry Douglas, who went on to become one of the greatest dobro players in the history of country music. Here's Tony Rice and J.D. Crowe and The New South, and pay a little attention to the guitar break.
What have they done to the old home place? Why did they tear it down? And why did I leave the plow?
Douglas on dobro.
What have they done to the old home place? Why did they tear it down? And why did I leave the plow in the field and look for a job in the town?
So we had some Segovias of bluegrass there. That was some pretty good strumming.
Yeah, and that was Tony actually singing, and he was considered to have one of the great voices in bluegrass music as well. The way that I discovered Tony Rice, who I'd never heard of, and I wasn't that far into bluegrass music. I had been exposed to a record that's very famous by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band called Will the Circle Be Unbroken, which featured all kinds of great figures, Jimmy Martin and Earl Scruggs and Vassar Clements and people like that. So I was acquainted with it, but I wasn't in very deep. And I was living out in Washington, and I saw this record in the record store, and it just had acoustic instruments. It had guitar and mandolins and violin on it and an acoustic bass. And for whatever reason, I bought it without really knowing who anybody were. But anyway, it was a very seminal record by a group called the David Grisman Quintet. David Grisman was a mandolin player and a very talented one. And he had come up with a new concept of music. He recruited Tony Rice to be the guitar player in that band. And I mentioned I'd had a familiarity with Django Reinhardt, the great gypsy guitar player. And so I like string jazz. And these guys came up with something that was just different. They've influenced many, many people since then. But this goes back to the very first recording by the David Grisman Quintet and introduced what's called dog music, kind of a blend of bluegrass and jazz. Features David Grisman on the mandolin, and we're going to hear Tony Rice on the guitar. And this is a song that Tony wrote called Swing 51.
Boy, they're playing the fret a lot.
I tell you, when I first heard that, Doug, it just knocked me out. I listened to that record over and over and over and over. And I did play guitar, and trying to learn those licks was quite a challenge. He's an amazing guitar player. Went on, many, many records were made with the artists that were in that band, much like Miles Davis's band spawned John Coltrane and Bill Evans and all these people. David Grisman's band did as well, and we lost Tony on Christmas Day.
We lost a huge person in music also in 2020, and that's John Prine. I mean, lots of people remember what an amazing performer he was.
Yeah, he was a great, great performer. I first heard John Prine in our art class when I was in high school. They could bring in records, and somebody brought in the John Prine record with where he's sitting on the hay bale. And, of course, that record is one of the great debut records of all time. Every song on it is just a killer, and including this one. This is a song that, John wrote about real life. He tells the story of his grandparents' home, a place called Paradise, Kentucky.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County,
down by the Green River where paradise lay. Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we travel.
You get the idea that oftentimes his audience would have lived that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's he said, you know, that's a song that he wrote for his dad, and he got a chance to play it for him. And,
you probably get asked this, Mike, a lot, but who are your icons? Who do you put on a shelf and just can't hear enough of?
Well, you know, John is for sure, but yeah. Bob Dylan is definitely, I would say, Van Morrison is still really high on the list for me. Miles Davis, I like piano players a lot. Jimmy Rawls and Bill Evans and Keith Jarrett. Keith Jarrett had a stroke last year and is not going to be able to play piano anymore. So there are people like that that are – James Brown, I'm actually a huge James Brown fan. actually. But there's a lot of – you know, there's so much great music out there. And, you know, it's just a treat. I love jazz. Like when I go home – and, of course, I play all these singer-songwriters and songs with, you know, whether it's indie rock or whatever, a lot of words to it. And I love standards, actually. I love swing music and standards. And I can go home and after having played music for 7 hours, Doug, I'll go home. And I'll start playing records and I'll sit for 4 or 5 hours.
How big is that collection now?
Well, I just got into vinyl. I had resisted vinyl, like, you know, I just thought I can't get back into vinyl.
So the analog digital thing just flared up in you?
Yeah, well, you know, when we moved to Fargo, I had packed away all of my vinyl for probably 20 years, maybe longer than that, and had gone CD, and I just, you know, had moved on. And so then I had to make the decision when we moved to Fargo, am I going to get rid of all this vinyl? And I thought, well, I have to give it a chance. And I didn't have a turntable at the time. And so I bought a nice turntable, you know, and I started unpacking those records and put together a nice little stereo. And by golly, it won me over.
Well,
I think I've bought I was counting the other day. I think I've bought like 175 records in the last 9 months. You
know? Well, I have about 200 pounds of records.
Yeah,
that's how I measure them.
Right.
And I've got an old Pioneer 737 SX that I'm getting ready to fire up. I've got to find the right bookshelf speakers for it.
Well, I could recommend a few.
But that device is 40 years old.
You know, there's something about it. I mean, I have a nice, you know, I listen to a lot of music digitally. I do it all the time. And I've got a nice, digital audio converter and everything. But there's something about vinyl. I'm not sure what it is, but it's the whole process, the ritual of it, and it's just the sound. I mean, there's something to it.
Well, a long time ago, I collaborated with a friend on a musical, which we created a record. So I've got half the mother. The mother for that record, the side B, unfortunately. but I've always enjoyed the little story that goes with that. Public radio has been changing. I mean, your show is something that's been going on for decades now, but public radio is moving away in some cases from classical and jazz. I mean, I'm thinking of Minnesota Public Radio's The Current, for example. That's kind of catching on in other places too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, The Current was actually Minnesota Public Radio came really late to the game as far as...
Well, they were way after Interview Music.
Yeah, well, 13 or 15 years or something like that or more. But you knew when they move in, they're big and they did it right. I personally really do what I can to help jazz, to represent jazz out there because I love jazz, you know, and I love, the whole history of it. Like I say, if I can I try to introduce everybody I can to Fats Waller and Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday and Benny Goodman and Lester Young. And, you know, I mean, this is all great music.
Well, you've got your Saturday Night Blues cruise.
Yeah.
So you can indulge your fantasies there.
Yeah.
Take us down the memory road again, though, with another performer who's left us because 2020 was a tough year, COVID or not, for music lovers.
It was. And here's a guy who, well, you know, we talked about that move to country music. And he's a guy who had a hit with the song we're going to listen to in 1968, bounced around, and eventually moved down to Austin, Texas, before Willie Nelson, before Waylon Jennings, before any of these guys. He kind of started that whole thing down there. Here's Jerry Jeff.
The song was first taking shape about two blocks from here. In the First Precinct Jail. I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you. Worn out shoes, silver hair, a ragged shirt, and baggy pants.
Boy, every time I hear that one, I tear up, man.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it just pushes a button.
You know, Doug, that song was Richard Nixon's favorite song. Sammy Davis Jr. recorded a great version. Sammy, he thought of Bojangles Robinson when he heard it, even though that's not really who the song, who inspired the song. Jerry was inspired by a dancer, a street dancer, who was in jail night with him. But it's, that's a great one.
And lots of people have made covers of that. I mean, it's just a fantastic song.
Yes, and a great little melody to it, too. Jerry Jeff, like I say, he was, along with Michael Murphy, you know, it was right after the Vietnam War. And the country at that time was probably in a state somewhat like we are today.
I would say in many ways. Yeah.
And in a way, you know, Willie Nelson gets a lot of credit for it, but there was a merging of cultures around country music down in Austin. And, you know, the hippies and the long hairs and the truckers and the bikers and everybody would get together and listen to country music and drink that Falstaff beer, you know. And let's hear this one. This is one from a record that's considered one of the great records of country music. It was recorded in a little place, I think population 4 or something like that, Leukenbach, Texas. Here's Jerry Jeff Walker.
He was born in Oklahoma. His wife's name, Betty Lou Thelma Liz. He's not responsible for what he's doing, 'cause his mother made him what he is. And it's up against the wall, redneck mother. Mother.
1, 2, 3, 4, who are we fighting for?
That's right. Yeah. Those sing-alongs, that brings everybody together.
It sure does.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, and then, of course, that eventually, you know, one of Jerry Jeff's songs from Viva Terlingua became the theme song for Austin City Limits for many, many years from that record, Viva Terlingua.
Well, we've only got about 3 minutes left in the show for you, so pick something really evocative that you'd like people to make sure they hear.
Here's a guy, you know, we're just talking about Willie Nelson and Jerry Jeff, and, you know, what happened is that kind of spawned what they called outlaw music, you know, and Waylon Jennings cut one of the most famous records in country music called Honky Tonk Heroes And it featured his own band and was a very loose setting. And it was featured the songs of Billy Joe Shaver. And Billy Joe was a great songwriter. Billy Joe just died. And well, let's let Billy Joe play. Billy had a hard knocks life. He was married to two women 5 times.
There's a lot of music in there.
Right. You get a lot of inspiration. Here's Billy Joe Shaver.
I'm going to live forever. I'm going to cross that river. I'm going to catch tomorrow night. You're gonna wanna hold me, just like I always told you. You're gonna miss me when I'm gone. Nobody here will ever find me, but I will always be around. Just like the songs I leave behind me, I'm gonna live forever now. Fathers and you mothers, be good to one another. Please try to raise your children right. Don't let the darkness take them. Don't make them feel forsaken. Just lead them safely to the light. When this old world is blown asunder and all the stars fall from the sky, remember someone really loves you. We'll live forever, you and I.
Could listen to an album of that, Billy Joe Shaver, Live Forever, and that's what these people do because they made recordings and we're still listening to them.
That's right. That's right, Doug. These, you know, Marty Robbins still out there, Roger Miller, Billy Joe Shaver, Waylon, you know.
And Mike Olson is playing them for you. Mike Olson is the host of Into the Music with Mike Olson on the Prairie Public Radio Network. Mike, it has been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Doug.
Dakota Date Book is next.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming along with our members and other sources here on Prairie Public.
Have you ever wondered how brands influence you? Is it the slick advertising or something else?
Lance Armstrong would go out there, you know, with this story of I beat cancer and I'm going to put on my gear. I'm going to put on that yellow bracelet. I had about 50 of them.
How companies get us to link their products with our identities this week on Hidden Brain.
That's tonight at 8 Central here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for January 25th. Somehow, North Dakota's state penitentiary managed to keep the flu epidemic from getting inside for the entire year of 1918. But that didn't last. The flu had struck North Dakota that fall. The state prison's warden banned visitation, acting on federal and state orders. The measure appeared to work. The prison physician reported not a single case of flu among the 110 inmates that year. It was quite a bustling facility. The state penitentiary operated a twine plant, a brickyard, and many acres of farmland, growing more than 35 different crops, including parsnips, plums, cabbage, corn, spinach, and squash. The prison owned and leased more than 2,300 acres for the farmland. The prison farm also had hundreds of cattle, hogs, and chickens. The twine plant could be troublesome work. The prison physician treated more than 40 cases of skin condition resulting from oil on the men's hands and arms. And while the prison avoided the flu in 1918, in early 1920, a new wave of the pandemic surfaced. In response, Bismarck's city health officer banned public dances for 2 weeks. The Burley County Red Cross chapter called for volunteers to serve as nurses. North Dakota's state health officer recommended the public avoid crowds and unnecessary travel and visits. The state's top health official also urged health authorities to prohibit unnecessary gatherings and public funerals and to regulate seating in opera houses. This time, the flu didn't spare the state penitentiary. 25 of the 160 inmates fell ill around this time in 1920. One prisoner died. He was 28 years old and technically died from pneumonia, which often developed as a complication of the flu. But flu wasn't the only challenge for the prison. The penitentiary had 15 escapes in 2 years, and only 6 of the prisoners were recaptured. In 1918, a man who was in prison for life for killing his boss walked out of the prison and escaped to Mexico. He even took with him $25 raised for Christmas goodies by his fellow inmates. Today's Dakota Daybook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Whether you're a sustaining member, or you give annually, or you've made additional contributions to Prairie Public, we thank you. Your generous support invests directly in the programs and services you and your community enjoy and depend on. Thank you, Prairie Public members. We're humbled by your trust.
Hospitals and healthcare workers across the country have been scrambling for critical medical supplies.
We were selling 75,000 respirators a month. We're now selling 6 million, and we have another 4 million coming on board.
Can manufacturers keep up? A new administration deals with a shortage of personal protective equipment on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thank you for joining us today for Main Street. As we broadcast, we stream online, and after the broadcast, you can find any Main Street show at prairiepublic.org, archived as a podcast. Tuesday on our show, the nonprofit Tracy Sanctuary House in Bismarck helps families and patients in their time of need. Executive Director Kelsey Zotnick will join us to talk about plans to expand access to this special housing need. And the pandemic disproportionately impacts minority groups. We'll talk about that with Barry Nelson. He's an organizer for the North Dakota Human Rights Coalition. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Tuesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.